He wants to get his paws on Astro. That's a hell of a mixture of metaphors, Freiberg said, grinning despite himself. Never mind the syntax. I don't trust Humphreys. I do trust you. Dan, my opinion doesn't mean a damn thing here. You might as well ask George, or your cook. Hunching forward over the table, Dan said, You can talk the talk, Zach. You can contact the experts that Humphreys has used and sound them out. You can talk to other people, the real specialists in these areas, and see what they think. They'd talk to you, Zach, and you'd understand what they're saying. You can... Dan, Freiberg said icily, I'm working 26 hours a day already. I know, Dan said, I know. Freiberg had thrown himself totally into the global effort to cut down on the greenhouse gas emissions given off by the world's fossil-fueled power-generating stations, factories, and vehicles. Faced with disastrous shifts in climate due to the greenhouse warming, the nations of the world were belatedly, begrudgingly attempting to remedy the cataclysm. Led by the Global Economic Council, manufacturers around the world were desperately trying to convert automobiles and other vehicles to electrical motors. But that meant trebling the global electricity generating capacity, and fossil-fueled power plants were faster and cheaper to build than nuclear plants. There was still plenty of petroleum available, and the world's resources of coal dwarfed the petroleum reserves. Fission-based power plants were still anathema because of the public's fear of nuclear power. The new fusion generators were costly, complex, and also hindered by stubborn public resistance to anything nuclear. So more and more fossil-fueled power plants were being built, especially in the rising industrial nations such as China and South Africa. The GEC insisted that new plants sequester their carbon dioxide emissions, capture the dangerous greenhouse gas, and pump it safely deep underground. Zachary Freiberg had devoted his life to the effort to mitigate the greenhouse disaster. He had taken an indefinite leave of absence from his position as chief scientist of Astro Manufacturing and crisscrossed the world, directing massive construction projects. His wife had left him. He had not seen his children in more than a year. His personal life was in tatters, but he was driven to do what he could, what he had to do, to help slow the greenhouse warming. So, how's it going? Dan asked him. Freiberg shook his head. We're shoveling shit against the tide. There's just no way we can reduce greenhouse emissions enough to make a difference. But I thought we've been working our butts off for... How long has it been? 10 years? Not even a dent. When we started... Fossil fuel burning pumped 6 billion tons of carbon dioxide into the air every year. Know how much we're putting out now? Dan shook his head. 5.3 billion tons, Freiberg said, almost angrily. Dan grunted, pointing through the van's window to the massive trucks rumbling by. Freiberg grumbled, Yamagata is trying to convert their whole fleet of trucks to electricity, but the Chinese are still using diesels. Some people just don't give a damn. The Russians are starting to talk about cultivating what they call the virgin lands in Siberia, where the permafrost is melting. They think they can turn the region into a new grain belt, like the Ukraine. So something good might come out of all of this, Dan murmured. My ass, Freiberg snapped. The oceans are still warming up, Dan. The clathrates are going to break down if we can't stop the ocean temperature rise. Once they start releasing the methane that's frozen in them... Dan opened his mouth to reply, but Freiberg kept right on agonizing. You know how much methane is locked up in the clathrates? 2 × 10⁻⁶ tons. 20 quadrillion tons. Enough to produce a greenhouse that'll melt all the ice in Greenland and Antarctica. Every glacier in the world. We'll all drown. All the more reason, Dan said, for pushing out to the asteroid belt. We can bring in all the metals and minerals the Earth needs, Zack. We can move the world's industrial operations into space, where they won't screw up the Earth's environment. Freiberg gave Dan a disbelieving look. We can do it, Dan insisted. If this fusion rocket can be made to work, that's the key to the whole damn thing. Efficient propulsion can bring the cost of asteroid mining down to where it's economically viable. For a long moment, Freiberg said nothing. He merely glared at Dan, half angry, half sullen. At last, he mumbled, I'll make a few calls for you, Dan. That's all I can do. That's all I ask, Dan replied, forcing a smile. Then he added, plus a ride to the airstrip for George and me. What about your cook? With a laugh, Dan said, she goes with a van, old buddy. She only speaks Japanese, but she's terrific in the kitchen. And the bedroom. Freiberg flushed deep red, but he did not refuse Dan's gift.
Cellini City.
The customs inspector looked startled when he saw the plastic cage and the four live mice huddled in it among the loose food pellets. He set his face into a scowl as he looked up at Pancho. You can't bring pets into Cellini. The other astronauts had sailed through the incoming inspection without a hitch, leaving Pancho to face the grim-faced inspector alone. They had cruised to the moon without incident, none of the others realizing that Pancho had milked each of their bank accounts for a half hour's interest. Pancho figured that even if they eventually discovered her little scam, the amount of money involved was too small to fight over. To her, it wasn't the amount so much as the adroitness of the sting. They're not pets, she said coolly to the inspector. They're food. Food? The man's dark eyebrows hiked halfway to his scalp line. Yeah, food. For my bodyguard. Most of the customs inspectors knew her, but this guy was new. Pancho hadn't encountered him before. Not bad looking, she thought. His dark blue zip suit complemented his eyes nicely. A little elderly, though. Starting to go gray at the temples. Must be working to raise enough money for a rejuve treatment. As if he knew he was being maneuvered into giving straight lines, the customs inspector asked, Your bodyguard eats mice? Pancho nodded. Yes, sir, she does. The inspector huffed. And where is this bodyguard? Pancho lifted a long leg and planted her soft, booted foot on the inspector's table. Tugging up the cuff of her coverall trouser, she revealed what looked like a bright, metallic blue ankle bracelet. While the inspector gaped, Pancho coaxed Ellie off of her ankle and held her out in front of the man's widening eyes. The snake was about 35 centimeters long from nose to tail. It lifted its head and, fixing the inspector with its beady, slitted eyes, it spread its hood menacingly. The man flinched back nearly half a meter. Ellie's a genetically modified crate. She'll never get any bigger than this. She's very well behaved and wicked poisonous. To his credit, the inspector swiftly recovered his composure, most of it, at least. You can't bring a snake in, he said, his voice quavering only slightly. That's against the regulations, and besides, there's a special exception to the regulations, Pancho said calmly. You can look it up. Paragraph 17D, subclause 11. With a frown, the inspector punched up the relevant page on his palm comp. Pancho knew the exception would be there. She had gone all the way up to the Cellini Health and Safety Executive Board to get it written into the regs. It had cost her a small fortune in time and effort. Many dinners with men old enough to be her grandfather. Funny thing was, the only overt sexual pass made at her was from the woman who chaired the executive board. Well, I'll be dipped in... The inspector looked up from his handheld's tiny screen. How in hell did you get them to rewrite the regs for you? Pancho smiled sweetly. It wasn't easy. That little fellow is poisonous, you say? Her venom's been engineered to reduce its lethality. but she's still fatal unless you get a